This is The Health Show, a presentation of National Productions.
Just about every day, you're faced with questions about what you eat. Questions like, is honey better for you than sugar? Is milk necessary for strong bones? Are eggs bad for your heart? And those are just the ones you ask before breakfast. Now there's a book that takes your food questions and does some research to find answers.
There was a recent survey that showed that more people said they thought it was easier to figure out how to do their own taxes than to figure out what to know to eat to be healthy.
On today's Health Show, we'll talk to the author of Coffee is Good for You.
We'll also hear the story of an uninsured accident victim's journey through the healthcare system and how she turned it into a one-woman show. I'm Dr. Nina Sachs.
I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Health Show. Eating healthy can be so confusing. There are a lot of questions and even more answers. Plus, if you check that wonderful resource known as the internet for information, forget about it. But I recently came across a book that has answers to a pile of those questions, and the author did all the research for you. That author is Dr. Robert Davis. He's an award-winning health journalist and an adjunct professor at Emory University's Rollins School of Public Health. His book is called Coffee is Good for You, The Truth About Diet and Nutrition Claims. We spoke recently, and I remarked that the book's format reminded me a lot of the political website PolitiFact with its truth meter.
Absolutely. You know, I found that and some other services like that to be very useful when it comes to statements about politics and public policy. So I actually took that idea and applied it to science just because people often are so confused about what to believe when it comes to this information.
And there is so much information that we get right now. Was that the reason you took this and said, okay, we'll take all the information and conflicting views out there and just try to make sense of it all?
Yeah, you know, people are more confused than ever, and it's ironic because there's more information than ever, and scientists actually know more than ever, but yet people are more confused than ever. There was a recent survey that showed that more people said they thought it was easier to figure out how to do their own taxes than to figure out what to know to eat to be healthy. And I think that speaks to what all of us feel, which is there's so much information, so much conflicting information, so much flip-flopping information. How do we sort through this? How do we know what to believe and what not to believe? And so my idea was to serve as sort of a truth squad or an umpire, whatever metaphor you'd like to use, to sort through this information, to sort through the science, and to try to make some objective calls about what is believable and how believable it is.
All right, well, let's get right down to it. Is coffee good for you?
What I found looking at the evidence is that, in fact, there is a growing body of evidence that shows that coffee, in fact, may be good for you. We have studies showing it's linked, coffee drinking is linked to a lower risk of heart disease, lower risk of certain cancers, lower risk of stroke, low risk of diabetes, low risk of Parkinson's disease. And so what we can say from that, from these studies, is that we can't say for certain that if you drink coffee, you'll be healthier, but we certainly can say there's mounting evidence that coffee may be good for you. And if you're a coffee drinker, you're concerned about the coffee, probably not something to be too concerned about, for most people at least.
You can probably say with surety, though, that if you keep dunking jelly donuts in it, it's not going to be very good. No.
Right. And if you're going to Starbucks and regularly consuming coffees that have 300 calories, which some people do because those calories can add up in blended beverages, for example, that's not good either. But we're talking here about black coffee. The evidence is pretty good that it may, in fact, be beneficial.
And an awful lot of this book focuses on food. Do you see where a lot of the confusion is just what to eat?
Right. I did focus exclusively, actually, on food in this book. And the reason I did that is in my previous book called The Healthy Skeptic, I wrote about a bunch of different health issues, food being one of them. And I found as I would go around and speak to people, 90% of the questions would be about food. And I found this also from being a health journalist covering a number of topics for 25 years, the topics that often get the most attention and also generate the most sort of, I'm confused, I have more questions, is nutrition. So that's why I chose to focus on that exclusively in this particular book.
As you were researching this book, what did you come across that really surprised you?
Oh, a number of things I found. I mean, just to give you one example, water. You know, we hear all the time that we all need to drink water. We're all dehydrated or mildly dehydrated, and we need to keep drinking water to make sure we're healthy. And in fact, looking at the evidence, and again, this is strictly looking at the evidence, what I found is there's surprisingly, not a lot of evidence that supports that idea. And in fact, most of us get enough water just by relying on thirst. That's a sort of built-in mechanism that's pretty good, that served us well for a long time. So if you rely on thirst, for most people, and there are a couple of exceptions I talk about in the book, when you're thirsty, you drink. But I think that some of us feel that we need to force ourselves to drink water all the time, and that's probably not necessary for most people.
Where did you go for research on this book? What kind of what things did you take advantage of?
I looked at scientific studies, and in the book I talk about the kinds of scientific studies I look at. You know, there's a range of studies, everything from test tube studies all the way to randomized trials, which follow people to either get a treatment or a particular diet or to get a placebo and follow them over many years. So there's a range of studies in between. So I looked in scientific journals, nutrition journals, and accumulated the top studies, the most reliable studies in each of these areas, and looked critically at the ones that were the most reliable because they were conducted in the most rigorous way. So-called cohort studies, for example, that follow people over many years, randomized trials. And what I looked for was what scientists call the totality of the evidence. That is to say, what does the evidence as a whole show? Not looking at one study or two studies, because one or two studies are never definitive, but looking at the direction of the evidence as a whole, particularly these better studies. And also I took into account who funded the study, because that's really important. Increasingly we see entities with vested interests, for example, food companies or supplement makers funding research. And so I took that into consideration as well when I looked at how believable some of these studies are.
Well, you did come across a few things that went against, I'd say, the conventional wisdom.
Right. So I certainly, there are a number of, I think, surprises, and there will be for a lot of people who read the book, surprises, things that are contrary to what you think, things what you've heard from industry, for example, that certain foods may be good for you. But I also found some things that people, some industries may like, for example, coffee being one you mentioned. The other is eggs. We hear all the time that eggs are bad for your heart. You should avoid eggs because of the cholesterol. And again, looking at the evidence, strictly looking at the evidence and putting aside all the claims on both sides, what I found is that the evidence is not there to suggest that eggs are bad for your heart. In fact, people, even people with heart disease who eat up to 6 eggs a week, do not have a higher risk of heart disease or subsequent heart problems than people who don't eat eggs. And so that's something that can help reassure people who enjoy eating a few eggs a week.
Now, this book is going to settle every argument, because there are some where you just kind of, you really can't come up with a decision. I see the one about diet soda really stood out to me.
Right, and I think that's something important I talk about in the book, where unfortunately, as good as nutrition science is, you know, a lot of times we think, well, scientists don't know what they're talking about, they're confused, but I think nutrition science is better than it's ever been. We have more information than we've ever had. But that said, we have some areas where we just can't reach a definitive conclusion. We need more information, and what we have so far leads to a conclusion I have of inconclusive. And so diet soda is a perfect example, where there are studies that suggest that people who drink more diet soda actually put on weight. Now, that seems counterintuitive, and so there's some explanations for that. These were correlational studies, which means they don't prove cause and effect. So it's possible as people are putting on weight, they drink more diet soda. So that doesn't prove that it's the diet soda that's causing their weight gain. But on the other hand, there are some theories that may explain why this occurs. For example, there's some studies that suggest that drinking diet soda causes people to crave more foods, crave more sweets. The artificial sweeteners, perhaps that have effect. Do we know that for certain? No. It's more preliminary kind of evidence, but it's enough evidence to suggest that it's a possibility at least. So in that case, when I said that the claim being that diet soda actually makes you gain weight, my conclusion was that that's inconclusive. But there's at least enough evidence to say that it's a possibility. And I tried to be clear in the way that I describe each of these claims and the evidence as to whether it's inconclusive, whether it's likely true, likely false, or whether it's half true. And so there were pretty strict criteria I applied. In this particular case, I think the evidence says we're not sure, but at least it's possible.
And, of course, you do validate some things that people have taken to be true over the years. I know my wife is very happy with you because she eats oatmeal every day to get her cholesterol down. So you made a friend there.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And that's another example where we've heard some conflicting information. You know, for if you remember 20 years ago, people that can remember back that far, there were even longer, there were claims about oat bran being this wonder drug that if you ate oat bran or if you put it in your cookies or your potato chips, you would lower your cholesterol. And that craze went on for a few years, and that went away. And then we started hearing about Cheerios and about oatmeal. And so looking at all the evidence, I found there is, in fact, some decent evidence that oats in variety of forms, whether it's oatmeal or Cheerios, even oat bran, can in fact lower cholesterol. The key, though, there is you need to eat several bowls a day. You can't just eat it occasionally. You need to eat several, at least a bowl or two. It depends on what kind of oatmeal and what kind of cereal you're talking about, but you can't just do it occasionally to have an effect.
Did you tackle supplements in this book or vitamins?
I did tackle some. So, for example, I looked at vitamin C. That's a big one we hear all the time. Vitamin C prevents colds. My mother's a big proponent of that. Other people I know claiming that, feeling that whenever they start to feel sick, to take a vitamin C. And what I found there was that there's not a lot of evidence for that. There have been lots and lots of studies done, and most of them, by and large, have failed to show that popping vitamin C can prevent colds. There are a few exceptions, people that are in extreme conditions regularly, for example, marathon runners or skiers, marathon skiers, people like that can in fact see a slight decrease in how long the colds last, maybe by a day or half a day, which is not very much. But for most of us, the studies have not shown that vitamin C makes much of a difference.
Well, you've tackled food. What's next?
Well, you mentioned supplements. I did, in fact, cover a few vitamins, vitamin B, vitamin C, niacin in this book, but I think there's a lot more to do when it comes to supplements, herbal supplements and other kinds of nutritional supplements that people buy because those are so popular. It's a huge and growing industry. A lot of confusion there, a lot of studies that seem to be conflicting and people not sure whether these things work and what the side effects are. So that's something that I'd like to take on in some way perhaps next.
That's true. There were news stories about that almost every other month. I mean, 2 years ago, you thought having vitamin D would make you live forever.
Right, and that's a good example. And vitamin D is actually another one I cover in this book. Vitamin D, we've heard now that vitamin D is sort of the vitamin du jour. In the past, though, we have to remember we've heard that vitamin E was a sort of lifesaver and vitamin C had other benefits, supposedly, and certain B vitamins with regard to all kinds of ills. And when they put these to the test in clinical trials, what they found in almost every case is these vitamins don't live up to their billing. So that's why I would say with vitamin D, it may very well ultimately prove to be as beneficial as some people think, but we need to wait for more rigorous clinical trials before people start popping lots of vitamin D.
Dr. Robert Davis is an award-winning health journalist and an adjunct professor at Emory University's Rollins School of Public Health. His book is called Coffee is Good for You, The Truth About Diet and Nutrition Claims. It's published by Perigee.
Still to come, navigating the healthcare system without insurance can be a really entertaining show. That's next on The Health Show.
You can find The Health Show anytime online at healthshow.org. Search the archive and listen to whole programs you may have missed or would like to hear again. Even subscribe to our podcast. That's healthshow.org. You can also follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thehealthshow.
You can start your own Health Show archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for Health Show number 1271.
This is The Health Show. I'm Bob Barrett.
And I'm Dr. Nina Sachs. Ex-model Hogan Gorman was living the typical New York working actor's life, auditions and classes by day, waitressing by night, when she was hit by a car and suffered debilitating injuries. And of course, she had no health insurance. So, being a typical New York actor, she turned the experience into an acclaimed one-woman show. She also wrote a book called Hot Cripple, An Incurable Smart Aleck Takes on the Healthcare System and Lives to Tell the Tale. Okay, the title really doesn't say smart aleck, but you get the idea. The Health Show's Joe Donahue recently spoke with Hogan Gorman and asked when she knew she was going to write about her experience.
Well, after I had recovered, it was the only way I could process it. And being an actress, it's the only way I knew how to process it. So I wrote the one-woman show first, And through writing it, I realized it wasn't just my story. It was the story of millions of Americans going through the same thing. And then after I did the show twice, that's when the publishing world asked me to maybe think about turning it into a book.
When you say, you know, what you've gone through, and so many other people obviously have gone through this, but how long does it take you to process it, even to the point where you can write about it? It seems to me that you just would have to cogitate on that for a while in your own mind.
I did. The recovery was quite long. It was 3-4 years. And during the last year is when I wrote it.
When it happened, what were your thoughts? What was your prognosis for yourself?
Well, when I was hit by the car, I should probably say they hit me going roughly about 40 miles an hour.
Right.
My head took out the entire windshield. They slammed on the brakes and I went flying 10 feet. Then I was taken to the hospital. And once they found out I didn't have insurance, I was basically ignored. I had to beg for a CAT scan of my head. The man in the bed next to me, who had only fainted during dinner, whose CAT scan was fine and who had insurance, was kept overnight for observation, and I was released with a neck brace and a good luck. And over the next few days, it became apparent how truly injured I was. But no doctor would see me until I found a lawyer to be covered by something called No Fault, which in certain states, including New York, covers people hurt in accidents up to a certain amount of money if the driver has insurance. But they can cut you off at any time, which they ended up doing. And that's when I ended up maxing out my credit cards, going through what little savings I had because I couldn't work, ended up on food stamps, Medicaid, disability. And the only reason I didn't have insurance was because I couldn't afford it on my own in between rent and eating, and the nightclub I worked in didn't offer health insurance.
Give us a sense of the extent of your injuries. They were to your head, to your back?
Yeah, I had a head injury and a very severe concussion. My short-term memory was shot for almost 2 years. I had vision problems, balance problems, constant pain, herniated 5 discs between my neck and lower back, which all pressed on nerves so I could go weeks with my right leg being completely numb, or at times my hands would get paralyzed for about 30 minutes at a time. And then it tore 2 ligaments in my knee and a chunk off the back of my kneecap.
When you decided to work on this project, at what point did you become comfortable with the word cripple?
Well, that is something that somebody called me as I was limping down the street on my cane. A man said, "Oh man, that is so cool. It's not often that you see a hot cripple." And obviously, I was horrified, but when I went to write the show, it seemed like the only title for it, to take that power away from that name that I had been called and turn it into something else.
What was the rehabilitation like? Did you know what you were in for? I mean, did they tell you it was going to be years?
They didn't know. Injuries like that, you don't know. I mean, I'm lucky that I'm doing well now, quite frankly. And I have to stay on top of my recovery to this day. I go to the gym 5 days a week and do physical therapy exercises. I've turned more to an Eastern approach to medicine now, and I have a non-aggressive chiropractor, no cracking or jarring involved, but she just aligns my spine and does kinesiology, and then I use meditation to deal with the pain. So now I'm doing really well.
And so the show, the book, tell of all of the stories along the way, everything from a stalker ambulance driver to lawyers who are lazy and judges who are insane and doctors who are very attractive and obviously the pain that you were going through. Meanwhile, you're trying to have relationships. That isn't working out. A lot of you get sympathy from some people. A lot of people you don't get sympathy from. At what point do you turn to humor? At what point does that become funny?
I think, I think my sense of humor was the only thing not injured in the accident. When something like this happens to you and it's just one thing after the next, I went so far down the rabbit hole, and at a certain point you're like, what? No, I mean, this is not, something else can't happen. And then it does. It gets to the point where you just have to surrender and start laughing at the irony of it all. That's what I did, and that's the only thing that saved me, I think.
So what's it like to share the story? What do you get back from an audience that helps? Because I assume that plays a role in the extended recovery as well.
It does. After the show, people wait for me and want to talk to me and tell me about their healthcare or welfare nightmares or something that's happened to a family member or a friend. And I think it just opens up these doors of communication that are so great. A lot of people are just say, you know, thank you for telling what I've been going through or what my family member has been going through and making me laugh about it at the same time. And that's what I get back, is that somebody else in the audience can connect with it and doesn't feel so alone as to what they're going through or what a family member is going through.
One of the stories you tell in the book, which is just amazing. So you get hit by the car.
Mm-hmm.
The driver's wife comes out. She says, I'm a doctor. You're not hurt. And basically just get up and get over it. Was there a point that you realized that you really were hurt?
Oh, no, I knew I was hurt.
No, I mean, was there a point that she realized it? Or did she just move on?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, I was taken away in an ambulance, and that was the last time I saw her.
Wow. And it would seem to me that would make you angry.
I was very angry over that, at the lack of humanity. But at a certain point, you can only hang on to that anger so long before it starts eating you like a cancer.
Right.
And I had to eventually let it go.
But you're angry about that, and then there's the healthcare system, and then you have the welfare system. And, I mean, at some point, do you feel like, okay, look, I'm just trying to do what I'm trying to do, which is get better, and yeah. it seems like there are just too many obstacles in my way.
Well, it's like navigating a labyrinth.
Yeah.
It really is, and especially when you're injured or when you're sick, it's just so much. It's so much. And yeah, you do feel like, can someone just help me, please? You know, I mean, really, we are in America, right? It is really overwhelming.
But when you start off with the baseline of being yelled at by the person who hit you and the anger starts there and nothing gets easy along the way, it would seem that you could become a very bitter person.
Oh, yeah, I could have. But you have a choice. You can become the bitter person, or you can just get through it.
Bitter
is just not a cute look for anyone.
Well,
really.
No. No. So what is it like then when you're feeling better and you have this work under your belt and you go out on that stage for the first time?
It is literally like jumping out of an airplane. And before every show, I've got to say, I have a full-on panic attack. I can't breathe, I can't remember my lines, you know, and it got to the point where after the second performance, my director's like, how are you? I'm like, I can't breathe, I can't remember my lines, I can't do this. He's like, oh great, a regular night at the theater for you. But once I walk out on that stage, I'm perfectly fine. And it's such a fun show to do as well. You know, I play 25 different characters, including myself.
Do you think you'd have the panic attack if it was far removed, if it was Jane Doe's story as opposed to Hogan Gorman's story?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's just going out on stage.
It's like nerves before going on the stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not as much about sharing the of the person, because you have to relive it every night.
Yeah, I do, and because I realized when I was writing it that it's not just my story, as I said, it's the story of millions of Americans, it makes it easier. And I wasn't sure the first time I did it how it would go over. And when I saw the reaction of the audience and heard the stories afterwards, I knew that I wasn't in it alone. It was their show just as much as it was mine.
Again, the name of Hogan Gorman's book is Hot Cripple, An Incurable Smart Aleck Takes on the Healthcare System and Lives to Tell the Tale. Well, sort of. She spoke with the Health Show's Joe Donahue.
That's all the time we have for this week's Health Show. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at healthshow.org. You can explore the archive for any programs you might have missed or would like to hear again. You can also subscribe to our podcast. That's healthshow.org.
Want more? Then follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thehealthshow. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is letters@healthshow.org.
I'm Bob Barrett.
And I'm Dr. Nina Sachs.
Stay healthy and be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Health Show.
Dr. Nina Sachs is a practicing member of the American College of Gastroenterology. Bob Barrett is producer of The Health Show. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Health Show is a presentation of National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content.